This is Dr. Claude Swanson, and welcome to the Synchronized Universe. I'm a physicist, and we'll be talking about the science behind the paranormal. As you all know, the paranormal has always been a fascinating topic. Brings in all kinds of questions of spooks and mystery and scary things. It's also the realm of magic. There are popular movies now like Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings that bring in the paranormal in the more magical side of things, being able to wave a magic wand and make things happen that you want to. But what's the science behind it? Is there something real that says that these things are something more than just our fancy and our imagination? That's what the Synchronized Universe is all about. As a physicist, I've been very interested for almost 20 years now in how much of the paranormal is real, and can we prove it? And when we can prove it, then the next question is, how can we explain it? If these things are real, then our science has to be able to deal with it in a serious way. And as a scientist, that was what got me into this in the first place. As a young boy in Virginia growing up, I used to go out at night and look out at the stars on the sunny, on a nice summer evening. And in the country, you see just millions and millions of stars. One thing that if you look up in the sky and you spin around, you'll notice the stars look like they're spinning too. And you'll feel this force. You'll feel your arms being pulled up from your sides. It's called centrifugal force. But at that time, when I was young, I kind of wondered, when I stopped spinning, the stars also seemed to stop spinning, and that force wasn't there anymore. And I wondered, is there some connection between the distant stars, the things that are far away, and this local force that we call centrifugal force? When I got to college, I went to MIT. I really wanted to learn all the science I could to see if there was some way of understanding some of this stuff. I really wanted to understand the universe in a deep way. I had lots and lots of questions. And when I was a freshman in physics class, I got the idea. I had enough math by then. I tried to calculate this effect of it, distant stars, things that are far away, affect things that are nearby. And I went to the teacher with my results. I had a little theory that I was able to work up then. And he said, well, you must have heard about Mach's principle. And I had not. There was an old theory from a German named Ernst Mach, the man we named the Mach number in high-speed supersonic flight after. And this idea is that the things that are far away affect things that are near. And this was a driving force for Einstein. He felt this was the right idea. It was a very deep and big idea, as above, so below. Things that are far away and things that are nearby connect to each other. It gives us a way to understand the universe in a very satisfying way. So Einstein tried to use this theory and put it into his relativity model. But when he got finished with his calculations, Mach's principle had fallen by the wayside, and it's not in our physics today. Now, this was a driving force, and through grad school, I went to grad school at Princeton University, one of the foremost schools in the world in physics, and I studied with the Nobel Prize winners and just brilliant, brilliant people. But somehow, the theories that I was learning about physics just seemed to be leaving out something. It did not seem to get at some of the really deep questions of curiosity that I had. And I kept working on my own theories until the mid-1980s, when I learned about remote viewing. If you're a physicist or have a scientific bent and you hear about remote viewing for the first time, you'll probably react the same way I did. I thought, this is clearly impossible because it breaks every law of physics that I've ever learned. At the same time, I was hearing about it from people who I trusted, and I knew it had to be real, but it meant that there was something about our science that my schooling had left out. And that's where the Synchronized Universe comes in, because this is what started me on my quest to find out what's real in the universe, what really goes on. as opposed to what we're taught in school. And as you start looking into all these big mysteries, like remote viewing, ESP, psychic phenomena, teleportation, levitation, the soul, UFOs, all these wonderful subjects, you find that the mainstream media, certainly in that time, and even today to some extent, they don't tell you the whole story, and you have to really dig. And that's what I began doing at that time, is just digging like a crazy man, just very intensely looking at every possible piece of information to find out what was real. I read thousands of papers. I read hundreds and hundreds of books. I met the authors. I met the scientists who were doing the research. And I tried to figure out, well, what about this stuff is real? And if it is real, then how can our science start to change to begin to account for us? So the bottom line is that we're at the beginning right now of a far-reaching scientific revolution. This is something completely new. It's a new frontier in our science. In the mainstream sciences, dark matter and dark energy have appeared, and they're puzzling scientists. When I was in college, we were taught that how many particles, all the elementary particles that make up matter, you know, have atoms, and inside atoms there are neutrons and protons and electrons. Inside the neutrons and protons there are quarks, and that was the picture that we were given of what our universe is made of. Now we know that that only explains about 5% of the matter in the universe. The rest is something we don't have a clue what it is. It's called dark energy and dark matter, and that's about all we know about it. The dark energy repels matter, which is very strange, and the dark matter supposedly attracts, but we don't know what that is either. Something very important is missing. If you look into our laws of gravity and electromagnetism, which tells you how charges push and pull when they're interacting with each other, in both of these fields, we're also finding experiments that are violating what we thought was true. There, in gravity, for example, if you take a pendulum, which is just a weight swinging on a long string, and let it swing back and forth very slowly over the over the course of a day, as the Earth rotates underneath the pendulum, the path of the pendulum on the floor will seem to change. This is called a Foucault pendulum. If you go to the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., you'll see one of these long pendulums swinging back and forth across the floor, an arc of 20 to 30 feet, very slowly and majestically. And as the Earth turns through a day, the axis on the floor of the pendulum appears to change, and that's a well-understood effect. But every so often, when there's a solar eclipse, this pendulum is observed to veer off at an unexpected angle. This has been duplicated by several different scientists. It violates our current laws. So we're seeing experiments like this that tell us that even the laws that we thought we understood, like gravity, they break down in some mysterious cases. Take another one, electricity. You think you understand electricity. Like charges repel each other, unlike charges attract. So we take two electrons, which are little tiny negatively charged particles, and push them close to each other, they push apart, they repel. That's what the law says. That's what they're supposed to do. But if you take 10 billion or 100 billion of these electrons and push them together, by our current theory, they should fly apart at enormous speed, but they don't. They stick together. It's called a charge cluster. When you squeeze them into a volume on the order of a thousandth of a millimeter or so, they stick together, which is, breaks all the laws of physics. It's just totally unexpected. It's probably because the vacuum energy, the zero point energy, is coming into our laws now when you get so many charges in such a small volume. So it's changing our laws of physics. But this is something that our current science is not adjusted to yet. Also, take one of these little charge clusters and shoot it at a piece of metal. And after it hits the metal, it'll bore a hole in it. And what you find is inside the metal, there are new materials that weren't there before. The charge cluster, when it impacts upon the metal, actually causes fusion events in the metal. These have all been scientifically demonstrated, published papers that show that these are real effects, but violate our current physics. This is probably also the key to how cold fusion works, because cold fusion often requires sparks or some kind of little breakdown to occur, and that probably causes a charge cluster, which then causes the fusion. So we have all these remarkable contradictions happening, and this is even just in mainstream science. Now suppose you go to the paranormal. In the paranormal, in the last 30 years, scientists have been doing experiments to prove in the laboratory that paranormal effects are real. One of the most respected laboratories is the Princeton PAIR Lab, stands for Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Laboratory. And over a course of 3 decades, they've done hundreds of thousands of experiments with remote viewing, with ESP, and with psychokinesis, which is affecting things at a distance with your mind. What they found is even average people, if you do an experiment enough so that all the randomness kind of averages out, there is a real effect there that even average people can remote view, they can affect things at a distance, and they have ESP ability. And these results have now been proven in published papers with odds of billions to one, so that they're very real effects. So what our science is learning is the paranormal is real. When I was younger, I had to listen to long debates and arguments from people who were skeptical and who had not done their homework. And, it's just amazing that nowadays, if you read the papers, the arguments are settled. Scientifically, these effects are real. Edgar Mitchell, who was a Apollo astronaut and the sixth man to walk on the moon, did the longest distance ESP experiment when coming back from the moon. He pulled out some special little card symbols and transmitted telepathically over 200,000 miles to 4 psychics back on the Earth, and proved that ESP does not weaken with distance. The accuracy does not get worse when you go thousands of miles away. It's as good as when you're going right next door. By the same token, found that when you transmit messages into the past or into the future, or when you try to affect an object in the past or in the future, under certain circumstances, you can transmit the information with the same strength and the same accuracy as when you're transmitting something in the present. One of the inventions that people have developed to show all this, to prove some of these effects, is called a random event generator. It's like a little noisemaker. It's like a little coin flipper. It makes ones and zeros, makes a stream of them, and it's of a random sequence of ones and zeros, just as if you were flipping coins, and the one is heads, and the other side is tails, the zero is tails. And these random event generators are then used by psychics to see if you can affect their outcome. They'll ask a psychic to try to make the random event generator, called an REG, make it come out with more ones, or make it come out with more zeros. And when they ask the psychic to do it, they find that they're able to, even over distances of thousands of miles. There were 2 dramatic experiments I can mention to you that really kind of proved this once and for all. One of them, run by a famous psychic back in the 1970s, Ingo Swann. He was deeply involved with the creation of the CIA's remote viewing program, along with Hal Puthoff back in that time period. Hal Puthoff was a laser physicist who worked at SRI, Stanford Research Institute, back then. And the two of them were trying to decide what to do, what kind of good experiment to do. And Hal said, well, we have this device in the basement. It's wrapped in 7 layers of shielding. It has superconducting shielding, it has mu metal shielding. Nothing has ever disturbed this device. So Ingo, why don't you see if you can go out of body and in your out-of-body form can go and influence this device. And Ingo, paused for a minute, relaxed, and he went out of body very easily, and he began to describe what he was seeing in his mind's eye about the interior of this device. And as he looked at each particular element of the device, the output of the device showed these anomalies. The trace, which has been this nice, smooth trace, showed glitches all of a sudden. And no one had ever seen this machine produce a glitch before. And so three different occasions when Ingo looked at this device, he created these glitches even through all that shielding. This is one of the most dramatic examples of how the mind can affect things at a distance and through shielding with no trouble whatsoever. By the way, if you go to my website, which is www.synchronizeduniverse.com, and synchronized is S-Y-N-C-H-R-O-N-I-Z-E-D, synchronizeduniverse.com, you'll see some of those graphs, and you'll see some description of some of those experiments that were done back then. My book, The Synchronized Universe, New Science of the Paranormal, talks about these experiments in much more detail and explains the background behind them and what they meant in terms of the revolution in physics, which is now taking place. Another experiment shows that it's not just us humans that have this ability to affect things at a distance. A Frenchman named René Piok, a scientist, knew that little baby chicks bond to the first thing they see when they're hatched. So he had a little robot that was self-propelled, and he used one of these little random event generators, these REGs that I mentioned earlier. He devised the thing so that REG output would steer his robot to left and right. So if you put the robot in a little box and let it run, it'll just, because it has a random event generator steering it, it'll just go randomly left and right, and it'll bounce around and make a random pattern in the box as it runs freely. But the next thing he did was took his little baby chicks when they were just born, about one day old, and let them bond maternally to this robot. So they thought this robot was their mother. Then he put the chicks in a little cage at one end of this rectangular enclosure. Then he put the robot into the enclosure and let it run. And amazingly enough, the robot now did not move around the entire length of the enclosure as it had before. It hovered. It hovered at the end of the enclosure where the baby chicks were. The only explanation is that the baby chicks were able to affect the random event generator that was steering the robot. And they caused the robot to linger near the end where they were. They wanted their mama, and they knew how to make mama be close. So it's a remarkable example of how even animals have this ability. But one step beyond that, a man named Cleve Baxter was a famous polygraph expert. He taught the CIA to use polygraphs to check their personnel for security violations back in the 1950s when these things were just first beginning to be used for that purpose. He was a real expert. He had a school to teach other polygraph operators. And the school was in New York, and one night he was sitting in his office. It was a long day, and he was looking at his little house plant and thought it might need some water. It looks a little thirsty. And he wondered how it would react if he hooked it up to his polygraph machine. You know, a polygraph is also called a lie detector. And basically, it just uses sort of resistance, passes a very weak current through the body, and measures how that varies as the person's physiological state changes. So he hooked it up to his plant. He just clipped it onto the plant's leaves and then gave the plant some water. And he was kind of surprised because the plant did not react the way he expected. It reacted more like a human. It produced these waves on his polygraph machine that reminded him of human emotion. Well, polygraph operators are taught to put their subject under stress. So the next thing he thought was, what would happen if I burned its leaf? the moment he formed the thought in his mind, the trace on the machine went wild. The plant sensed what he was thinking about doing and freaked out, and it showed up on the polygraph machine. So this is the first known case where we have proven that plants are psychic too, that they sense our thoughts and our emotions. That was 1960s, 30 years plus since then. Thousands of experiments have been done by many, many people to prove that this effect is real. Nowadays, there's even an experimental fighter pilot helmet that has a little bit of plant material that uses as a sensor, because it turns out that you don't have to have the whole plant to pick up these energies. You can have a leaf, or even take a leaf and chop it up into a paste and still measure that. And it's the cells in the plant that sense when something has a hostile intent toward it. So nowadays, experimentally, they use this material for pilots to tell when someone on the ground might be wanting to shoot a missile at you or have some other hostile intent. So this is an experimental application of this remarkable new field of the paranormal. What we have also discovered is that it's not just a few powerful psychics who have this ability. You could take an average person, hook up his brain to measure the brain waves, and send him a psychic message. And if they've shown that the brain waves respond as if he just received a verbal message. The brain at a subconscious level knows when the ESP message comes in. Normally, an average person will not be aware that he picked up the message. If you ask him after the session, he'll say, no, I didn't receive any message at all. But the subconscious mind, which shows up in the brainwave pattern, proves that actually we always pick up these psychic messages. And that's why it's important to meditate, to quiet your mind, to learn how to stop that chatter that occurs in the conscious mind, to sort of tune into the subconscious mind, which is really the receptor for these psychic messages. So what I'm trying to show here is that there is a science that's building up about the paranormal, about psychic ability. These are actually, they're not weird, they're not occult, they're not woo-woo. These are part of who we are as human beings. Psychic abilities, and there are other dimensions and other phenomena that go along with these things, is part of our science that has not yet been uncovered. It's not being taught in schools yet, but in a laboratory it's being proven to be true. So this is kind of the science of the new millennium. And it shows us that we're really much more as human beings than we have been led to believe. I think, from a philosophical perspective, the old sort of atheistic dogma of from dust you come and you go to dust when you die, and that's all there is to it, it's all about matter. You know, it's all about atoms and matter. That's all that's real, you know. But what we're learning in the paranormal experiments is that these other energies are very real, and even spirit, in terms of intelligence and consciousness, is real. And our science is getting to where it's going to be able to understand some of these big questions about consciousness and about the soul. They're already kind of edging into the edges of these big questions. One really powerful experiment that was done to prove the reality, for example, of the astral body, I'll describe in a second. For hundreds of years, people have talked about the out-of-body experience. You know, some people describe an OBE, or out-of-body experience. When they think they've left their body, their consciousness goes somewhere else, they could describe distant events. Other people say, well, you know, maybe you thought you did, but really you were just having an imagination or a dream, and you didn't really go anywhere. An experiment was done in the 1970s by Dr. Carlos Osis, using a psychic named Alex Tanaus, who was in a chair strapped down with instrumentation. And in another room, quite a distance away, was a target. It was a scene that could be made to change and vary over time. And this room was locked and protected, and around this scene were various types of detectors to measure electric fields, magnetic fields. There were little strain gauges, which basically had metal plates hanging down. Any little vibration or change in the plates would be sensed immediately. What they found is that whenever Alex Tannhaus, the psychic, in his chair, was able to describe accurately the scene in the other room, the sensors around this target were going crazy. They were indicating that some kind of mysterious energy force was present at the target. The only explanation is that when Tannhaus thought he was going out of body and said he was going out of body, that there actually was this energy form that went and was present at the other location and was sort of part of his consciousness that's able to travel. Another example of this remarkable type of experiment was done by the Chinese in the mid-1980s. They had some very powerful remote viewers, and they would, for their target, they used a Chinese character written on a piece of paper. Next to this character was a photographic film, and it was all put in an opaque envelope and sealed away somewhere. And the psychics were asked to try to go out of body and go to this location and describe what Chinese character was in the envelope. What the scientists discovered is every time the Chinese psychic correctly described the character, the film became exposed inside the envelope and actually became exposed with the Chinese character imprinted upon it. Apparently, this astral body, this part of us that travels, has energy with it and actually caused the film to become exposed. Another similar experiment was done in the U.S. by Hal Puthoff and other scientists a couple years after that to see if they could replicate the experiment, and they used a photomultiplier tube that would actually measure extra light, and they found that whenever remote viewing was good, there was some light that was present that was not normally there. So over and over again now we're seeing that the astral body, you know, this soul body, this part of us that is our consciousness, is the center of our consciousness, has measurable aspects to it. Now if you've gone to haunted houses or if you've ever experimented with ghost hunting, you may have come across something that is probably related. It's called an orb. Orbs are little balls that sometimes show up in flash photography. They sometimes appear to be moving at rapid speed. If you go outside a haunted house or in a graveyard, and I've done both of these things at night, and do flash photography, you will sometimes get strange streaks and strange lights in the photograph that can't be accounted for by normal photographic aberrations. These are orbs. I have filmed them on video film as well. And apparently it's a very similar type of thing. It's an energy form that has consciousness to it, and yet it does not fit into our current science in any way. It's probably part of this soul body, which is this whole new area of exploration of science. Of course, you know, as far as religion goes, this is the oldest question there is. You know, what happens when we die? Do we have a part of us that survives death? I think now our science is starting to discover that these energy forms are real, and in some circumstances, we can actually detect them and measure things about them. So this new revolution that's going on is going to change how we think about ourselves and how we think about the external universe. And it may affect how we live, too, because another part of this whole big issue of the paranormal is past lives, you know, is reincarnation. If the soul, if this energy form survives death, then it can come back and in another lifetime at some point in the future. So we have all these possibilities that start to open up, and you have to really go into each one of them in great depth and with care and try to be objective as much as possible to figure out what the truth is. But that's really what has motivated me in my journey over these last 20 years, is to figure out, first of all, what's true of all these different controversial ideas, and secondly, then, how can our science start to try to explain it? And if our science has to change some, and if the theories that we have today have to be modified to explain it, then so be it. And that's what I've been trying to do in my book, The Synchronized Universe, A New Science in the Paranormal. It talks about that. And if you go to the website, www.synchronizeduniverse.com, you can learn a lot more. And that would be a good place to buy the book if you are interested in doing so. One of the keys to this new science is something called subtle energy. That's one of the discoveries that, I mean, I've made, and lots of other people have made the same discovery. But subtle energy goes by different names and has been discovered over and over again by scientists for the last several hundred years. The Chinese call it qi. It's the life energy. It's the energy that flows through the acupuncture system, the meridians of the body. It has different forms. It's also essential in making up the auras around the body that help life and life processes and metabolism to go on so efficiently. It's also the center of the Chinese martial arts like Qigong and Tai Chi, which use this energy either for fighting or for health. It's also the essence of Reiki, of other energy medicine forms, where you're trying to use this energy to heal organs and correct physiological systems in the body. So subtle energy, or qi, is really sort of at the center of all of these different paranormal phenomena. And that's one of the things that I've learned. As you start going into this, you find that some scientists in China have mastered this energy, so that while in the West it's still controversial, there are doctors, and there's one man named Dr. Xin Yan who gives a lecture to students, and while he does so, he has these large atomic detectors in different parts of the room. They're called lithium fluoride detectors, and what they find is that when he projects his qi, his energy, these detectors show an energy that they have, that they pick up. They show a measurement so they can prove there's something there when he throws his qi. So our science is starting to prove these things are real, but we're just beginning to understand it. There's so many applications of this energy that, it just boggles the mind. It's like 1850 all over again, except that now, in those days, electricity and magnetism were just being discovered. And if you can imagine what it was like to be a Michael Faraday, who was the one who made all of his measurements with electricity and magnetism, they were living in a time when the lighting was from candles, And if you wanted to travel somewhere, you had a horse and buggy. That was technology in those days. Electricity, and learning how to master it, has revolutionized society. So lighting is electrical. Cars have electrical components to them. Housing does. Electricity is everywhere now. So it's totally transformed our society. As our society understands subtle energy, the paranormal forces, better and better, this is also going to transform technology and transform how we live. One of the most powerful lessons that comes from learning about subtle energy is the power of the mind. And this is the part that is really, really new for scientists. When you're educated, as I was, in normal, conventional Western science, you think that what's in your mind while you're doing the experiment is irrelevant. It should not be able to affect the experiment. But when you deal with subtle energy and the paranormal, what's in your mind has enormous effects on the outcome of the experiment. In fact, this stuff we call sub-energy actually responds to thought. There's an inventor named Robert Pavlita in Czechoslovakia who's invented over 70 different devices. They kind of resemble little mobiles. They're little lightweight, fragile-looking objects that are made of copper and wood and, you know, different types of materials. He's designed them very specifically to use this subtle energy, to collect it and to transform it into force and motion. And he's really proven to Western scientists and observers that not only does this device collect subtle energy and create motion, but when you think a certain thought or you set a certain intention, these devices actually respond to your intention. So we're learning now how to actually engineer devices to kind of couple in to thought. But if you've ever practiced positive thinking, or if you've ever tried to use the power of your mind or power of visualization to manifest something, you know that this is really a widespread ability and that everyone can do this. And probably everyone does it from time to time. The top athletes now are taught how to visualize, how to create positive mental images and to hold on to them. And when you really focus your energy on those images, it allows you to do miraculous things on the playing field that you couldn't do before. So I think as a society, we're just starting to realize that subtle energy is real and we can use it in the way we focus our mind and set our intention. You know, they say, careful what you wish for, you know, because it might come true. I think that what we're learning now is that it really will come true if you focus upon it strongly enough. So the lesson from that in terms of everyday life is, you know, choose positive thoughts. Choose good thoughts that you'll be proud of and that benefit everyone involved, and send out love. And that's sort of the first step in applying what we're learning to everyday life. There's a man named Bill Tiller in Arizona, a former Stanford material science professor. He's a very highly respected scientist, and he has a laboratory that's been studying this stuff, this subtle energy, or this chi, for a decade or two. And he has been able to build small electronic devices that when you program the devices, he finds that you have four strong, experienced meditators who are meditating very intensely while the device kind of freezes in its circuitry. These are EEPROM chips, basically, that you create a device which looks like a random signal that it produces, but actually can change the environment in dramatic ways, can change water, can change the pH of water, can cause the physiology of fruit flies to change. And he's been discovering that as these devices operate in the lab over days and weeks, it actually charges up the lab with subtle energy so that you get some remarkable effects, interaction between the consciousness of the experimenter and the device. And these are well documented now, just amazing results that they sound more and more like science fiction the deeper we go into this. We're discovering this whole new universe of phenomena that's really going to change our science in a dramatic way. So the science of Star Trek may not be science fiction, you know, for much longer. Anyway, in my book, The Synchronized Universe, I talk about a number of these phenomena, and then I also present in the last chapter the beginnings of a theory, of a way to understand some of these phenomena in terms of how our physics can change to begin to understand these phenomena. Now, we are open for callers. If there are any out there, the toll-free number in the U.S. or North America is 888-268-4313. That's 888-268-4313. And the international toll-free line is 281-419-7697. That's 281-419-7697. 7697. So if there are callers who have questions, please feel free to go ahead and dial into the show. But the synchronized universe idea basically goes back to looking at how matter is made up at the smallest scale and tries to understand how the universe looks to a particle as it moves around very rapidly in space and time. And from that picture, you find out that particles, elementary particles, can interact with each other over very large distances, so that the entire universe, all the particles in the universe, can become coupled together on a small scale. And this makes it possible to explain how parallel universes, parallel systems of synchronized particles can be created, so that we're in one synchronized system of particles, and that's what we call our universe. But other systems of particles can have a different synchronization, and they can be present right here where we are, and we'd be unaware of them unless there's some kind of frequency shift that would allow us then to go from our current reality to one of these parallel systems of reality. I'm not going to go into much detail right now unless there are people who want to hear more about this, but I would you know, suggest you go to the website, synchronizeduniverse.com, and check it out if you have questions about it. But you might ask, why is it important? Why is it such a complicated idea about the universe? And the fact is that when you start looking into the paranormal, you find out that matter, the good old solid matter we take for granted, is not so solid. People have out-of-body experiences where they go right through walls, and they can actually describe the inside of the wall as they go through it. There are some gifted individuals, like there's a man named Zhang Baojing in mainland China, who has demonstrated for high government officials and for visiting VIPs that he can make solid objects go right through walls with people watching. One of his most famous experiments, he'll take a 100-pound bag of sugar, and he'll, by focusing his energy and his mind on it, he'll cause the bag not only to move, but to actually sort of teleport itself through a solid wall. And Paul Dong and Thomas Raffel, in a couple of very good books about mainland China and some of the super psychics that the government there has rounded up and is training, talks about these experiments. And Zhang Baojing is quite well known, both in Hong Kong and in Beijing. So in order to understand how it's possible to teleport objects through other objects, we have to kind of step back a little bit and say, you know, maybe the billiard ball model of the universe is not enough. Maybe there's something missing from that, because if matter can go through other matter, then maybe it's a little bit more like everything's a hologram, you know, that that it's possible to pass things through other things, because at a very detailed level, atoms are mostly empty, and it's energy, but it's energy of motion, and the particles themselves are have virtually no volume at all. So anyway, that's the that's the sort of very brief overview of some of these strange phenomena. The exciting thing, from my perspective, about this whole new field is that it teaches us things about ourselves that before have been, you know, the domain of speculation and of theorists and theologians. And now we're starting to be able to kind of prove in the laboratory and to prove with scientific measurements that some of these things that have kind of been captivating us for so long are very real. One of the big questions, of course, for example, is what happens when we die? You know, I mean, is that just the end, or is there something else after that? And what we're finding now is that there are many different ways we can study that in a fairly scientific way. One way, of course, is to notice when someone dies, there is a weight change. There's a sudden change of weight of the person when he dies. It's about a half an ounce to an ounce. And doctors are putting dying patients on a bed, which is attached to scales, and able to show that something leaves the body that weighs about that much. They've also photographed orbs, little balls of light, several inches in diameter, leaving the body when this happened. So again, there's this sort of proof that something special happens. Something does leave the body. Ian Stevenson, a professor of psychology at the University of Virginia, over decades has studied thousands of cases of reincarnation. These are cases where children remember or say they remember a past life, and they describe it in great detail. What Stevenson and his team of researchers has done is take those stories and try to interview the children and track back and see if they match up with, for example, the child may describe the name of the village that he came from. He may describe the name of his siblings, his mother, his children, things like that. So Stevenson will go back and check up on these things and see if they really match up. And he's found that in the majority of cases, they match up with incredible accuracy, so that the whole story about reincarnation appears to be on a solid factual basis based on his research. And there are other people who have also discovered this. In other areas that are just as exciting, there's a whole phenomena called electronic voice phenomena or interdimensional transcommunication, where for decades now, ghost researchers have found strange noises showing up on their tape recorders. And they found that when they play these things back, or sometimes they have to slow them down and then play them back, there are actual voices on the tape recorder. And the voices claim to be people who are deceased, people who have departed, and people who are on the other side, if you like, but they left messages. One of the most famous involved two Catholic priests back in the 1950s who were working with an old-fashioned tape recorder that used a metal wire. The wire kept breaking, and one of them got very frustrated and called out to his father, who had been dead for a long time, to please help. Well, the next thing they heard when they turned the tape recorder on was the voice of his father mentioning his son by a pet nickname that no one else knew. And the voice of his father basically said, well, of course I'm here. I'm always here, son, you know. And the two priests were so frightened, they took the recording to the Pope and asked him if they were dealing with works of the devil or was this something that was okay to be fooling with. And the Pope said, this is natural. It just proves that, you know, we don't die. Our souls continue. Our life continues. And don't be afraid of it. And they had the Pope's blessing. But there are phenomena like this that have been discovered now by many different researchers in different countries, that when we depart, when we die, that same energy that makes paranormal phenomena possible also seems to be involved with what goes on in these other dimensions, which we call the other side. So we're on the verge of learning more about what life after death is really like. I mean, there have been very wise adepts and yogis in India and China for thousands of years who have told us about what those realms are like, but now our scientists are starting to be able to get some direct information from things like electronic voice phenomena. I'll give you one more example just to show how real and immediate these realms are. I have a friend in Colorado who is a very expert ghost researcher named Christopher Moon. And we were at a house that was quite haunted one evening, and I get some good orb photographs, some good pictures of orbs moving around. I had my night shot video camera, which is good for, you know, showing orbs. You turn all the lights out and your camera's on, and I was watching the viewfinder hoping I would see an orb. Now, Chris said he had seen several orbs already that night, and I was a little envious and a little frustrated. I wasn't seeing anything. So then Chris said out loud, he asked from those spirits who were present, because he believes and feels these orbs really are the spirits of departed people. And he asked that one of them would appear for my video camera so I could get a good picture of it. Within 2 or 3 seconds, in the center of the viewfinder of my video camera, a nice orb, a couple inches in diameter, showed up. It just popped in, and then very leisurely, in a couple of seconds, very slowly, moved from left to right about 30 feet across the field of view of my camera, and just made a beautiful sequence of about 30 frames on the video camera of this nice little orb. So it really seemed to me very convincing, not only, of course, that they were real, but secondly, that they respond to consciousness, that they have a sentience about them. So these are just a few examples just to indicate that these other realms that we're learning about, you know, are important to us. They will change how we think of ourselves and how we think about the universe. Many of you probably know about auras and these different layers that supposedly surround the body and that psychics can see and healers can see, and that they're very indicative of health. What appears to be true from a lot of this research is that these auras also are sort of existing in these odd parallel dimensions. They're not so much in the physical as in these other dimensions. So you can think about a human being as existing not just in the physical dimension, but in these other dimensions like the astral and the causal, so the various different layers. So we're really sort of multidimensional beings, and we have these different levels, and most of us go through life, you know, quite unconscious, quite unaware of these higher dimensions. But one of the processes of meditation and of becoming more sensitive is that you can start to tune in and start to become aware of these other dimensions. And as you do, then you have a much richer and deeper appreciation for life around you, and you begin to have more power over controlling the environment, but also you develop a much deeper sense of love for other people, because all of us are made up of these higher dimensions. We're all basically these amazing spiritual beings that are here in this physical dimension. Some of us are, you know, pretty much unaware of these higher spiritual aspects of ourselves, but we're all here. We're all trying to learn. We're all trying to do our best to learn whatever lessons we came here to learn, and you become much more appreciative of your fellow man, I think, when you realize that we're all made this way. So it's a fantastic adventure. It's an adventure that's going to change our science in dramatic ways. I think it's also going to change how we think about ourselves in deep and dramatic ways. I hope and I believe that as we learn this truer, deeper picture of who we are, that we'll learn to take better care of ourselves and our fellow beings and also of the planet. Because I think that's the whole purpose of being here, is to learn how to live better and how to live in more peace with our fellow man. So hopefully, as we explore the synchronized universe in the next few months, this awareness will become apparent to everyone. And it's just a very exciting adventure. It's a wonderful time to be alive. And I just want to thank all of you for joining me this first night, this first episode of the Synchronized Universe. I'll be talking to guests in the future weeks and months, and we'll explore different aspects of it. But welcome once more to the Synchronized Universe. Go online, www.synchronizeduniverse.com, synchronized with a Z. I have an email contact address there. You can also purchase the book online at the website. But welcome, and thank you very much, and I'll be seeing you in future weeks.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.